Welcome to the Public Handicapper Podcast. On this week's pod, we are handicapping five of the major stakes from Fairgrounds on Saturday. This is show number 56, March 20th, 2020. I'm Scott Carson, founder of Public Handicapper, and I'm joined by my co-host, Hall of Fame handicapper, Chris Larmy. Chris, since Washington was the first major state to be hit, where are you at? Are case numbers going down?
No, they're definitely not going down right now. I'm not sure when things will stabilize. We're just continuing to ratchet up the social distancing measures, and we haven't gone to a total lockdown sort of like they have in California yet, but we're just about there, I think. So I'm just going to take advantage of any opportunities I have to get around and just, you know, do my part in a really tough situation and, you know, really try to enjoy this card at the fairgrounds, because who knows when we'll get a card like this to handicap again anytime soon.
All right. Well, let's hope for the best with this virus situation. In the meantime, we have a special guest. He's the Daily Racing Form handicapper and correspondent covering Chicago and New Orleans racing. You can find his picks for some of these races as the Weekend Warrior on Daily Racing Form. He's Marcus Hirsch. Marcus, welcome to the PH Pod.
Well, it's a pleasure to be on the pod. Thank you for having me.
Well, we're excited to have you, and I know that you've already been on a couple of pods, and hopefully you haven't covered the Costa Rising Stakes, the sixth at Fairgrounds. Maybe that'll be fresh and new for you today.
I am always up for a good Costa Rising discussion. Why? I mean, let me just air a grievance here. Costa Rising, that was a Louisiana bred who excelled in dirt routes. It's just wrong that the horse named after him is a turf sprint. Stuff like that annoys me.
Yeah, maybe they're thinking the race might come off the turf and stretch out to
a mile and a 16th, yeah, or something.
You don't like having the Run Happy Traverse Stakes? That's not things like that annoying.
Well, I mean, Run Happy could do anything. He could win from 2 furlongs to 2.5 miles over hurdles, so it's totally appropriate.
Over crushed glass too, right? Yeah.
All right. Well, just a couple of questions for you, Marcus, since we haven't had you on the show before. And I know you're a famous DRF guy, but maybe people don't know that much about you. So I wanted to ask you a few questions. The first is, besides being a good handicapper, you're a darn good writer. That's one thing that I've noticed when I've read your stuff, and especially when you do those long form articles, which I can't remember, but I know you did one a few years ago that was really, really, really good. And I was just wondering, did you go to journalism school?
No, I didn't. I have an English degree from the University of Montana, which was accomplished like 10 years after I first went to college. But I was doing a lot of writing, and I also, you know, had all kinds of different jobs, especially when I was not in college. You know, don't come from an affluent family. I had to work to make a living. And I ended up, the longest job that I had was working at Gainsborough Farm. So Gainsborough Farm, I worked at for almost 2 years as, you know, taking care of horses. So anyway, to make a long story slightly less long than it might be, those two worlds of writing and horse care, horse husbandry converged. I got a job in Kentucky, and, you know, and one thing led to another, and you know, I've been with Racing Form now, shockingly, for I think close to 2 decades.
According to the little bio that I saw when I looked you up, you've been there since 1998.
Oh my God, that long? Yeah, it's funny. I got a job with them and I was just doing pagination. Mainly they let me write a couple of closer looks. And then there was a downsizing and I got laid off right away, like a month after I started. And then I ended up getting hired to do freelance. I was covering Turfway Park one winter and they picked me up as a staff writer. So yeah, I've done a lot of different things for them. I mean, you talk about the writing part. My job used to be way more story heavy and, you know, sports journalism heavy. I mean, I've always done handicapping, don't get me wrong. And that's always been a part of my job. But, you know, we had a section for a while, DRF Weekend, which was like a pullout every Saturday. And I was like the main features writer for that. I used to work on long features all the time. Just don't do that as much anymore. Everything's changed. I miss it in a way, but it's an understandable narrowing of focus, I think, for a newspaper and for any trade publication to concentrate more on the engine that drives the whole sport, which is the gambler and the betting on races.
Naturally, you use DRF as your handicapping tool. I was just wondering if you use any other tools besides DRF.
No, I mean, not products.
Not that you're allowed to say publicly.
No, I mean, I wouldn't, I don't, I mean, sometimes I see the sheets, the Ragazin sheets, I definitely will have a glance at those if I can get a hold of them. I don't seek them out on a regular basis. I understand, you know, the arguments for and against. I know, buyers and sheets numbers, and I do have some degree of confidence in the sheets numbers, and I like to see all relevant speed figures. I think that, you know, you have to trust one particular number less if you can get an overview of all of them and create a baseline for how a horse is being evaluated that way. I just think, like, the more for me, the more information, the more data you can find, the better. I've gone past the point of data overload, which I think is a concern for some people. Like, sometimes too much information is a harmful thing. But I have been, like, looking at this stuff long enough now that I'm not personally concerned about that. The more stuff I can see, the more workouts I can watch. I want granular detail.
All right. And last question, at least for me. How often do you change your mind after you've submitted picks to DRF? Because I know you have to submit pretty early, and I change my mind from Friday morning till Saturday often.
Yes. Well, I mean, that's one of the hazards of this public selecting. It's like our deadlines are 48 hours out, and often I do the picks even 3 or 4 days out. How often do I change my mind? I mean, pretty frequently. Especially because you just can't account, like, you don't know what the track's going to be like, which is a huge, like, when you're going through a car during the day and you see that, you know, the inside is dead and, you know, you're on the horse you picked is a clear inside speed horse. I mean, you have to alter your opinion. And that happens frequently. Like, how often do I look at a race and then look at it and feel completely different? Like, oh my God, I've made a horrible error. I totally misread X, Y, Z. I mean, that probably happens like 10%, 5% of the time. Not very often, but it does happen where I'll go back over a race and just see that I've missed something essential one way or the other.
Okay. Chris, before we get started, did you have any questions for Marcus?
Well, just one on the fairgrounds. You must really love the fact that fairgrounds does their entries really early. They give you lots of extra time given the deadlines you have to work to.
Isn't it great? I mean, it's a week out. All the tracks in Louisiana do that. They did it, I think, for horsemen to get withdrawal times, you know, more matched up. And I know the horsemen bitched about it to no end when it first came on because people are inherently resistant to change. But now the horsemen like it. And I think that it should be like way more widespread. I mean, why not? What's the downside? People know what race they're pointing for anyway. Just get the PPs out as early as you can.
especially like on a big day like this card they have at Fairgrounds.
Yeah,
just to get people talking about the horses, you know, in advance. You know, why wait 2 days before the race to do that? And sometimes and sometimes on the big days, they even wait like 1.5 days because they have to have the draw like in the evening or something. So you even have time to talk about it. So,
yeah, I totally agree with you.
All right, well, let's get started because we have 5 races. Plus, we'll probably spend a little time on the Fairgrounds Oaks. We're starting today with the 6th race at Fairgrounds on Saturday, the 21st. It's the Costa Rising Stakes, 5.5 furlongs on turf. Purse of $75,000 for 3-year-olds and up Louisiana breds. And Marcus, as the highlighted guest this week and the Fairgrounds expert, let's let you get started.
Well, this is a brain crusher of a race, I thought. And what was noteworthy to me was the lack of real, you know, a lot of true speed elements in a turf sprint. Let me just preface everything by reiterating what I've already mentioned a couple times in print and talking to people. The temporary rail on the turf course it's been taken down by now. This is Friday. So the running races today and obviously Saturday in the true position, 0 feet with a permanent rail. So the rail was at 9 feet through Thursday's races. And if you watch the Fairgrounds races on Thursday, that was a mushed up course. It's the end of the meet. You know, it's New Orleans and below sea level. The grass doesn't take huge root anyway. So every time they've taken the rail down this meet, you know, they do it before the big days. They run all the big races, January, February now. And they also, I think the December 21st card, they did the same thing. When the rail has come down, that fresh ground along the inside has been converted a tremendous pitch. Inside speed has been absolutely deadly in these instances. I don't know why that would change. I don't think it will change. I saw good ground way, way out in the middle of the track, but nobody's going to get out that far. So if you're not in those first couple paths, you're going to be in that chewed up part of the course that they were running over through Thursday. So for me, these turf races, as much as anything, and, you know, sometimes, you know, I look at races this way in advance and then it all just completely falls apart. What I assume will be the case is, and that's not impossible. I mean, this car could be dominated by 6 wide closers on the grass. Who knows? But I'm assuming that I'm going to use the evidence at hand. And that was the kind of the driving force behind how I looked at all these races on turf for this card, including this one. And, the reason I selected Win Lion Win on top number 2 is because in a relatively paceless field, now his dirt form stinks recently, but he's not a dirt horse. But what I thought was important was all the speed he showed last time at Delta. If he runs that fast early, I think he's the one that makes the fence and the lead. And he won this race last year, so the quality is there. So I picked Win Lion Win to win this race. But God, if you wanted to take huge shots here, anything could happen in this race, in my opinion. I Monty Man, who's a short price, that horse is nowhere near as good as he was at his peak. He's drawn 7. I don't think he's going to make the front. He's totally vulnerable. And it could be one of those. It could be a total chaos race.
All right. Well, Chris, we look to you for some clarity. Can you make anything out of this chaos?
I feel sorry for anybody that looks to me for clarity, then you're in deep trouble. But I agree definitely with Marcus that it's really strange. There is no speed horse in here. You can kind of guess at some horses that might get the lead, but nobody's going to like roar to the front and clear early and dominate the race unless there's some scratches and one of the AEs draw in. So I'm going to cheat a little bit. My first pick in this race will be any of the AEs if they draw into the race, because any of those horses will clear early and I think just dominate this race. So,
all right. And let me just note, I found out this morning that Fame Feather, who's the 3 horse, ran yesterday. So gets Laughing Saints.
Okay. Then
is in, and the next one could come in too.
All right. Well, then
if they want to run, if they want to run. I mean, that is a dirt. I mean, so far that's been a dirt horse. They may be hoping that it's rained off. I mean, I'm not sure they even want to run on turf, and they might not realize that they turf horse or not, they would have a huge chance. We'll have to see.
Yeah, he definitely has been better on dirt than turf. But if you look at his turf races, he has some excuses for those, and his breeding doesn't say he couldn't run on turf. So I would pick him if he draws in, or if the 14 draws in. I mean, any of those horses, they're going to clear, and they're going to totally dominate the race if, as long as they don't, you know, hate the surface or something. So, you know, if you get the 6-1 or higher that any of those horses are, that would be my play. But they may or may not, like you said, even if they could draw in, maybe they elect not to, to enter because they're hoping it comes off or whatever. But so just purely off of pace, if any of those horses are drawn into the race, they would be my pick. And if they do draw in, I would go with them. Assuming they don't, I totally agree with Marcus. It's kind of a chaos race. And I don't really like to lean towards the horses who might get the lead in this kind of a race, because they're not going to stretch out the field or gut anybody. They're just not anybody that's that fast. So I think it'll be a bunched up field, and a closer with that long fairground stretch, I think, actually has an advantage in this kind of a race, not the horses that are going to be on the front end. So if none of those speed horses draw in, the horse I really like in here is the 6 horse of Fleet Ascent, who is better sprinting on the turf. If you look at his form lifetime, he's had 14 starts that weren't turf sprints. He's never had a win. He's had 8 turf sprint starts with 3 wins and 5 times in the exacta. And for some reason, he's had multiple trainers. They all want to try him in other, you know, going longer or on the dirt. And his current trainer, you know, did the same sort of thing. He started him long on the turf. He ran him on the dirt once, and then he finally put him back sprinting on the turf, and he ran really well. He had a terrible start. It wasn't like he had trouble, just I think the jockey just wasn't ready for the start. He broke really slowly, was way back, worked his way into contention, found the lane late, and finished really well. Ran second like he usually does. He runs, hits that exact usually when he runs in turf sprints. What I really like is now they're going to take him, keep him on the turf sprint, and they sharpened him up with some really good workouts. I think he's going to be laying a lot closer than he was in that last race, and I think he can outfinish the field. So if you get that 8-1 morning line, I really think a Fleet Ascent is a really strong play. And even if one of those speed horses draws in, I'd still use him as well. So, you know, I'll go with the speed on the outside if one of those goes, and if not, I'm with a Fleet Ascent.
Okay, well, you stole my thunder with a Fleet Ascent. I'll just add a few things. So he is my pick in the race, although I agree with you that if Let It Happen Carlos gets in from the AE list, he can wire the field. But if he gets bet, I don't want him to be my pick. So I would choose between Let It Happen Carlos and a Fleet Ascent, whichever is the higher price. And I think a Fleet Ascent will be that higher price. He won his maiden at 5 furlongs at Del Mar. And 3 turf races ago, he ran close to his fastest, even though it was a longer distance. Since then, he's circling back to that best race. He was taken up a little bit after the start in his last race. He finished well. He shows some bullet work since that race. He does need to improve, but I think he's probably going to be higher than that 8-1. So that's also my pick. And I'm just going to throw in, because it is a chaos race, a horse that you might use underneath, and that's Eden Gray's Kitten, who won this race in 2017. They live for this race. He was 4th in this race last year at 46-1, 3rd off a layoff. Had run better 2nd off a layoff, and this is his 2nd off a layoff. So Eden Gray's Kitten is also a use for me if I get into pick ends.
Yeah, that Let It Happen Carlos is going to be a price. He's not going to get bad. I mean, this is a much different race than the one in which he was 2-1 last time. I think he'll be the longer, if he gets in, he'd be the longer price between those two words that you mentioned, a fleet ascent, and he.
Well, and it's interesting, you know, he has this blazing speed and the dam won on turf. So if he's ever going to run on turf, if he's ever going to get a turf race, it'll be in this one where he's going to have a speed advantage.
Yeah. I like him better than Laughing Saint Song, personally.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Just because he's not, and not only is his dam went on turf, but he has some siblings that ran well on turf too. So there's no reason why
the tires are more than ready. That's more turf too, and some of those custom for Carlos's do run on turf. I've noticed.
Yeah, so I mean, and he does. The thing I just like about Laughing Saint Song is just he's very quick and there's no speed. But I agree. If those two both get in, I would go with whatever. I can't even say.
Let it happen, Carlos.
Let it happen, yeah. Carlos. Yeah.
Let it happen. Okay.
I'm with you. Well, we still have four more to go. So let's move to the eighth race. It's the Tom Benson Memorial Stakes, 1 1/16 on turf, 100,000 for fillies and mares, 4-year-olds and up. And Chris, I think I know where you're going to go here. And I'm probably going to go there too, but we'll let you get it started.
All right. It's interesting as we go through this card, you know, this is like, we've been doing the pod for like about a year now. I think we figured out, and this card, I think might've been our second card that we talked about on the pod last year. And there's a lot of horses in this card that we have picked in the past. It's kind of like some of our greatest hits. In terms of picks where we got a price and they won. And one of those horses that we've picked before and has won for us is the 5-horse, Not a Prada Price. And
to be fair, you are the one that picked that horse.
Okay. But I mean, I'm just talking about in the collective we here, you know, between the two of us. And this horse, I think fits really well in here. There's not a lot of speed. I am worried about the 1-horse, if the rail's good, like Marcus said, given the connections, and this horse definitely, it looks like the speed of the race from the rail will be tough to overhaul, but Not a Prada Price. I think her best races have been when she's forwardly placed. So I'm hoping Brian Hernandez will put her into the race early, kind of track Dream Passage. And I think she definitely is good enough to win this race. She's as fast as anybody. She has that tactical speed if they'll use it. And she drew a good post. 8-1 seemed like a great price on that horse. So that's definitely, I think, the way I would go in here. Definitely would use the 1. And there's a couple other horses I like in here, but I don't want to take everybody's talk about everybody else's horses. So I'll turn it over to you and Marcus.
All right, Marcus, where did you land here?
Dream Passage, but Chris has mentioned the other horse I would be using in multi-race wagers in Not a Prada Price. Again, I'm focused on horses who are going to be on the rail and on the fence, and in Dream Passage, you have the ready-made item here. And unlike, like some out-of-town connections in the February, you know, multi-stakes card there, they seem to be utterly clueless about the situation on the turf course. Where you needed to be, where you wanted to be. But these people, Giroux and Cox, they are going to be fully attuned to the potential advantage their draw and their horse's style could confer. Now, I mean, 9-2, not happening. She's going to be a way shorter price than that. The only thing that could give you a little bit of a bump is you've got Altea for Brown and Rosario in this race. So that's automatically going to take some action. But, I mean, I just think that right now, the way the sport is structured with the who's participating in the betting pools, there's not as much dead money now than ever. Like, this may be the least dead money in our American pools that there's ever been this weekend. So, I mean, you're not just going to get people betting the connections necessarily. I think Dream Passage is going to probably end up being overbet, and that's going to annoy the hell out of me because, she shouldn't be. I mean, she's 6. What kind of upside does she have? She got so good at the end of last year. I don't really know where it came from. But, you know, she ended the year on a really strong string. And then her comeback race, I thought was really you know, fine. I thought she should have gotten a lot out of that. And you know, she had to battle for the lead there in a race that was dominated by an outside closer, Winning Envelope, who's in this race. I don't see anybody other than Not a Prada Price who's going to challenge her for front end supremacy here. And I think she, I mean, if you look at all the work she's had since that Jersey Lily Stakes, they've been able to do with her what they wanted to do with her. That's clear. That to me, regardless of her age and upside, suggests a horse that is going to make a forward move second time out. If she does that, if she breaks, she gets clear, I think she's gone, unfortunately. I'm just tossing like all these outside closing types, you know, like she's on a warpath. If she gets any action, it'll be ridiculous because she got the dream trip of all time last time along the Golden Rail. And, you know, she can't, I don't think she can run any better than that. And Winning Envelope is a horse who's had talent all along, but she's going to get a terrible trip, I think, if the course is the way I think it is. And the talented Ontario bred Desert Ride falls into the same category. I think there's a limited, for me, a limited number of ways to go, but I really want to hear, Scott, if you're going to mention Flower Party in this race, because I know that you've been a Flower Party fan in the past.
I am indeed. I'm this is my last ride on Flower Party. Okay. So I have a lot to say about
it. I picked her December 21st, to be clear.
Okay. All right. Yeah. And that was off the turf race. So like you probably picked her assuming she was going to be on turf.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was a prep for her. In her last, she was completely stymied in traffic. And I looked at the head on and it even looked like she had a little bit of weird, wonky things going on into the first time on the stretch. And it looked like she might have even bumped the rail into the first turn. She was completely stymied. You know, once she actually got into a rhythm, that was good. But she was stuck behind a gigantic wall of horses the whole time. She really never had a chance to run. And eventually she got out. But I think that he had to have given up on her. She galloped out fine. I mean, there was nothing wrong with her, but she was really stymied. And the thing about her is that look back into her PPs, she used to run on the lead. So I think Joe Bravo is going to put her closer to the pace and she's got a good post to get to that position. So I think she might be laying third or fourth. She's 6-for-12 on the turf. She's a grade 3 winner in Europe. And this is her third off the layoff. And if she runs as fast as she ran as a 3-year-old, she has a chance. But if she runs better, then she has a really big chance. And she's my pick. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's sort of last stand, right? It's third, you know, race off the layoff.
Not outlandish at all. Yeah, not outlandish at all. I mean, this, if you want to bomb, like she was 50-1 last time. I think she'll be higher than her morning line. I think she'll be 30-1 here. And it's well worth the price to find out if she can get back to what she, this is a horse that I personally liked last year. I watched her work even, I think, once live, like when I was down there. And I know the connection's a little, this horse can run. She's her form is totally buried right now.
All right. Well, I'll stop there because I know Chris has some other horses he wants to talk about, including probably Flower Party.
Well, yeah, I mean, definitely Flower Party. The race at Keeneland last year, I unloaded on this horse. Scott would, if he looks at her sheet, he'll know this is the kind of horse I'm going to pound. And she was, you know, I can't remember her price, but she was like 8 or 10 to 1. And I thought she was a standout and she just ran a total clunker. Clearly something went wrong. And then she had the long layoff and you throw out that off the turf race. And the first time she's really had a chance to run in a while and it wasn't a bad last out. So I'm totally with Scott on Flower Party. The other long shot I like in here is the 4-horse, who's a lot like Flower Party was in that race at Keeneland last year. I mean, her Italian form was spectacular. I mean, she would run first or second every time as a 2-year-old. Every time as a 3-year-old until she hit a soft course and got hurt, and then she's been off since then. And her comeback race was not bad at all. And now she goes second off a layoff. She could really improve off of that race too. So to me, Fullness of Life and Flower Party are the ones that can really juice up the prices in here. And then Not a Prada Price and Dream Passage are the other two. And you try to beat like the Chad Brown Closer and Winning Envelope and those other closers and hope that, because I think those four horses could be the first four past the wire the first time. Like Scott said, Flower Party has a little more speed than she showed. And I think Fullness of Life as well can be sitting fairly close. So I think this is a really good betting race myself.
I'll just add to Fullness of Life that she was pinballed a little bit after her last after the start in her last race. If you look at the head on, she was pinballed. Now, it wasn't one of these, like it was a complete pinball sandwich, but it was enough that it could have affected it, and she still ran her best. And it really looked like the jockey wasn't asking that much in the stretch, that it was like, hey, okay, we got our tightener in, and she's my second pick in the race. And coincidentally, I also like Not a Prada Price, especially if she's as high as 8-1. So I agree. Good betting race. Although be careful, because, the Chad Brown could run well, and Dream Passage is going to take some money, but there's sort of no reason for her not to run well.
Yeah. And the thing about the, trainer shipping in, Chad Brown wants all those jockeys to save ground. So I think Altea, even though she'll be far back, probably early, will be along the rail. So if the rail is good, that will help her chances. But I think that's your only chance to make money is if they overbet that horse, in terms of getting a price on the others.
Well, heck of a race, heck of a card. I'm just keeping my fingers crossed that they actually run it. All right, let's go to the ninth race. It's the New Orleans Classic. 1 1/8 on dirt, a purse of $400,000 for 4-year-olds and up. Marcus, what do you think?
I like a horse quite a bit in here, and by my standards, I think it's there are a bunch of horses here I give zero chance to. I'm sorry. I hope I'm not offending you and horses you're going to talk about, but Lone Sailor, Sonneteer, Chess Chief, Tenfold, Captivating Moon's a little bit better. He's cross-entered in the Muniz. They're going to run on dirt. If the Muniz were to come off, which it's not going to, and were an easier looking spot, they'd run there, but he's going to almost certainly end up here. And maybe like him a little better than those other horses, but I think it's going to be like a pretty even tempoed race, not too fast. And those closers, they need pace to be effective, in my opinion. So I'm pitching all of them, which kind of limits the prices. And I also, I don't like the morning line odds in this race. I don't think they're that accurate either. Including by my standards, the horse that I like, I think he's unfortunately going to be lower than that. This horse, he's got all of the upside in the world on the day to me, just given his, the way he developed about this time last year. He had a terrible trip in the Kentucky Derby, say that for 80% of the field, and then, almost every year. I didn't pick him in the Derby, but I liked him because his works after the Louisiana Derby, this is one of the best like workhorses you'll ever see. If you watch videos of him working, he's just tremendous. I love the way he works. And he was working like that before the Derby, even though he had a lingering like foot issue. They were working on his foot all the time, and that probably, compromised him in the Derby. And that was why he missed the rest of the year. They cut out the problem. It was more than a quarter crack, but they ended up like just cutting it all away and then letting the foot grow out over a period of a couple months. And by the time, his foot had grown out again and he was fully sound, it was late enough in the year, they're just like, okay, this year is kind of lost. Let's just point for next year. He turned in some dazzling workouts over the winter before his comeback race. And I'm sure you guys watched that race. I don't think the jockey even moved his fingers, much less his hands or his arms. He buried a horse, 2 Emmys, who was in good form over the winter, and no superstar, but a decent horse. it's a, to me, it was like the perfect comeback race because he had to run harder than a workout, but he didn't have to run hard at all. And whatever improvement he has, you know, like up toward his ceiling, I think he's going to show it today. I think his stablemate, Silver Dust, who's going to be a shorter price, works as a kind of de facto rabbit in that Fearless for Pletcher in from Florida. He's probably going to go to the front. But Silver Dust has been doing his attacking between the 3/8 pole and the quarter pole. He's been making like a little bit earlier moves, turn moves, which is something, you know, this horse has gotten better and better. And I think he's just developed athletically in that he can jump into the race quicker. I see him attacking Fearless around the far turn, which means that the, you know, Fearless isn't going to get away. And that's going to, the rhythm of the race is going to be in by my standards favor because I see him being in behind. And as those two are like going at each other between the 3/8 and the 3/16, I think this horse can cruise up into position and kind of maybe mow them down in the stretch. I just, Silver Dust, if you look at his whole career, he's kind of like the classic mile and the 16th horse. You get him out to a mile and an eighth and he loses just a little bit of that punch. And so I think he might be vulnerable to that like late attack from By My Standards, his stablemate, who I hope to get like 4-1 or 9-2. And I guess the other horse I should mention is Gunnit, who was coming at Silver Dust. Again, you watch this horse's races. He's not a professional racehorse. He has never once changed leads in the home stretch his entire career. And even last time when he was gaining ground, it's kind of an indictment, a little bit of Silver Dust that this horse was gaining on him because he was all over the track, not changing leads, not really even seemingly that focused. I can't like pick him to upset a race until he figures out, like gets his mind fully engaged in racing. I do think that he's like got more of a chance than those closers I mentioned early in the race, but it's, I'm going to bet By My Standards here.
Okay, Chris, where did you land here?
Well, it's just sort of funny because By My Standards got a lot of love from us before the Louisiana Derby last year, and it was all because of his spectacular morning workouts and how he's such a beast when you watch him work. I mean, he and Improbable to me last year were like, you know, yeah. they just attacked the track when they got out there. I mean, they just look like power, you know, personified. And so, you know, we were touting By My Standards before the Louisiana Derby last year, and he scored a big price. I wasn't as high on him in the dirt before the Derby because of the foot issues, and just I wasn't sure he was really ready for that big step up. But, you know, he's the kind of horse that I'm always touting, four-year-old, second off the layoffs, had talent. So I'm with Marcus all there. I think Fearless is stronger. Just because, you know, his second lifetime race was as good as anything in this field has ever run. And it's Todd Pletcher. And I think he has a tactical edge. I don't think Silver Dust can keep up with him. I'd really be surprised if he ever gets within, you know, on the flank of Fearless in this race. I think Fearless is going to be hard to catch, but By My Standards is the one who could catch him. And I think it's going to come down to those two. That's your exacta. I don't know if it's a win bet in here, because I think, like Marcus said, those horses aren't going to be 9-2 and 6-1 in this race. I'd be really surprised. But, you know, that's the way I see that. I don't have a long shot in here. I think those two are the ones that are going to battle to the wire.
Fearless is going to be 3-1 at the most. I mean, there's no way he's going higher than that. And By My Standards gets crushed on a regular basis. So I think between those two and Silver Dust, you're looking at the three strong favorites. I know that Marcus poo-pooed, and I totally understand. I think he's going to be longer priced than his morning line. And that is Lone Sailor, who I've never sort of cashed on, but I really love the circle back pattern that he has on his sheet toward his best. And I understand that he's got a pace disadvantage, but he's on the rail. He's low weight. He is circling back to a top that he's run a few times. And this is a pure sheet play for me. All the Way, Lone Sailor. You know, he's my pick. I do totally respect Fearless, Silver Dust, and By My Standards. And if I were to play pickens, which I don't know if I will, I would try to use all of them somehow, but Lone Sailor is the play for me.
But I just want to add that I wouldn't want to lump him in with the other horses that I mentioned initially. I do think that he is a notch above those horses. I do think he's a little underrated. It's his lack of winning and his one dimensionality to a certain extent, but I agree that he has a better chance than those others. And I also think you're right. He'll be higher than 6-1. I'm interested. Have you watched Fearless's works? Did you guys watch those at all?
I do not.
Yeah. But they were fast. I know that. But no, I haven't watched him. Have you?
Yeah. Yeah, I've watched all I could see of him. And even in his race, I just have a nagging dislike of the way that horse goes. He's floppy and he's kind of a dirty action. I know he went fast, but I'm worried that it's Gulfstream fast last time. And he really, he was in hand at the wire, but they really set him down hard, you know, like partway around the far turn to get that lead that he got, then he coasted home. I know he's got the pedigree and his figures are imposing, but I have a nagging suspicion that it's not all that it looks like, but we'll see. I mean, if he is as fast as, if you can believe that, I agree, he's going to be on the lead, and maybe he is all that. Maybe he was just a horse who's gotten over all of his early problems and is meant to be an excellent four-year-old. Really interesting horse, though, and I think it's an interesting race. I'm really looking forward to this race.
Well, I'm just going to give you a couple more reasons to bet against Lone Sailor. He's 0-6.
There are so many.
He's 0-6 at Fairgrounds. He's 1-8 at the distance, although he is 7-8 in the money at the distance, and he's won 849,000. So that's pretty good. Aside from the sheet pattern on him, his workouts are spectacular. Now he's always worked fast, and he's worked faster than he has coming into this race. But he ran a 48 bullet first out of 38. On February 24th. And then March 7th, he ran a 47.3 bullet, first out of 87. So, I mean, this horse is in fine fettle, and he's circling back to a top that he's run several times. He could run through that top, and I'm liking him even more.
Yeah. No, his Tenacious was actually pretty good. His first race after the Korean misadventure.
Well, and, another thing that I didn't mention is that he's third off a layoff, essentially, and Tom Amos excels at third off a layoff. Now, he's a good trainer all the time, and so he hits at 27% overall lifetime. I mean, that's a pretty extraordinary stat.
Extraordinary.
But third off a layoff, he's actually 33%. So, I mean, so many things are in his wheelhouse, and Lone Sailor is going to be the forgotten horse here. I'm liking him more and more. All right. We'll move to our next race, the 10th race. It's the Muniz Memorial Classic Stakes, 1 1/8 on turf, a purse of $300,000 for four-year-olds and up. And we'll let Chris start this one.
Well, first of all, just one of the horses you have to include, going along with Marcus's turf rail angle, same connections as, I can't remember, it was Dreammaker. Was that the name of the horse?
Dream Passage.
Now you've got Dot Matrix, who's, really hard knocking, homebred for 10 strike racing. Cox drew the same connections, draws the rail. Has tactical speed, should get a good trip. I don't know if you'll get 8-1, probably not, but that horse, definitely you can't leave that one out. But for me, you know, channel maker kind of is by far the class of this field. He just towers over these, I think. I wish it was a little bit longer, but his last race was a lot better than it looks. He was in against much tougher, for one thing. He kind of got sucked into chasing too close to a runoff leader. And of all the horses that were up close, the rest of them, you know, just completely faded late. He didn't, unfortunately. He got caught behind those horses right when the real running started at a mission office. And I'm forgetting.
Zulu Alpha.
Zulu Alpha got the jump on him. He finally got clear, and he did run hard. He and I'm drawing blanks on these names for some. Saddler's Joy were battling down to the wire for third. But that was actually a better effort. I mean, he really got stopped when he needed to run, and he went faster early than he should have. So, you know, to me, he just lays over these. The morning lines just hasn't looked really right on most of these races. So I don't know if you really get 6-1, but if you did, he would be the play. If you got 8-1 on Dot Matrix, that's probably good. I'll stop there, but to me, the class in this race is Channel Maker, and the trip horse is probably Dot Matrix.
Okay, Marcus, what are you thinking here?
Well, I have a lot of respect for Chris's opinion, but I don't like Channel Maker here at all. I think it's the wrong race for him personally, just in the way that I see, you know, the trip he's going to get. I think he's going to get an outside stalking trip, and to win over the way the course, I expect the course to be, where it's inside speedy, you would have to have a real punchy acceleration turn of foot, and that is exactly the opposite of what this horse is. I kind of feel like Mod is just using this race as a stepping stone. I mean, I don't think he's going to run bad. I think he'll run fine. He's a really good horse. It's almost certain to me that he needs farther to be most effective. At six, and with all he's done, turning back where he's going to need to show more acceleration, and there are going to be horses accelerating faster around him, I think it's the wrong move for a horse like him at his age. I know they want to run, well, I mean, God only knows what races will exist coming up in the next couple of months, but he won the Man of War last year, and they want to run in that race and win it again. And this is, Mott's got other horses to run here. So he put him on the plane, put him in the race. Mott is an old school trainer, and it's something that more people, more horsemen should be attentive to. It's okay to run and lose and just have your horse run a decent race to get somewhere else. He doesn't mind losing. He's okay with that. And I just think he's getting a race in this horse as a stepping stone. All respect to his accomplishment and his ability. But I'm not backing him. I do think you might get 8-1 on Dot Matrix, because I think that they're like, he's kind of like the B entrant for Cox. I think Factor This is the A team for this race. You have to grant that a regression is possible after his performance in the Fairground Stakes last time. But even though he had the 3 post last time and he's got the 9 here, I still think he's fast enough to get to the front. I think he's just got an early pace edge on Dot Matrix and everything else inside. I think he can get over and get to the fence. But the horse I do think is going to be maybe in the pocket and right in behind is Instilled Regard for Brown. And that was my top pick in the race. Yeah, I agree that he's not nearly as accomplished as a Channel Maker, but he has only been on turf for 5 races. He has limited turf experience, and he's really found a home on the grass. I'd like to Keeneland race quite a lot last April. Admission Office is a horse that's popping up in everybody's company lines in this race, including this one. And this horse beat Admission Office in the Fort Lauderdale over 9 furlongs. I really think that this 9 furlong distance hits this horse. Like, that's going to be exactly his best trip. Even the last one, the mile and 3/16, I think he just got caught out slightly by the distance in that race. Also, you know, I don't think it worked out ideally for him. And he gets back on LASIK here again, too, for whatever that is worth, and is taking a step down in class. Magic Wand and Zulu Alpha are a cut above, I think, his competition in this race, over 9 furlongs. I want to see him break and get to the rail and get, like, I hope that he would be in the pocket, if not, like, third back on the inside. And I have to think that the connections are going to be attentive to the way the course is playing by this time of the day. I like Brown's other horse too, Black Emperor, in the longer term, but he's going to be farther back. I'm not sure this is the race for him. I think of the two, you know, I'm going to side with Instilled Regard, and I like Factor This to get to the lead and run another big race. This horse Synchrony, like he got, the jockey made a mistake, in my opinion, by coming outside at the 3/16 pole in the Fairground Stakes. If he would have just waited and stayed inside in the best part of the course longer, he could have just sat there till the very end and then swooped outside Factor This and maybe won. But even accounting for that, he was on the rail almost the whole time last time. Now he's got the 12 pole. He has minimal upside at his age and level of accomplishment. And he's going to be a longer price maybe than 3-1. I think the line was made off the 7-5 last time, but this is a much different race than the Fairground Stakes. A lot more horses are going to take action here. And Synchrony might be the right price, but I think he's going to be in the wrong spot.
Well, I have a question for you, Marcus. You said that the connections of Captivating Moon said they're going to go in the dirt race.
Yeah.
How did that transpire, that conversation? Did you speak to the actual trainer?
Yeah, I did. I texted him. I said, is he in for dirt on Saturday? Like, I assumed, like, they entered in here hoping it came off. So this will be an easier dirt race than the other one if it comes off, which it probably almost certainly won't. It could rain, but not enough to have this come off. So he's probably, I think there's
but he said if it's, run. I mean, because he's got no wins on fast dirt. So I understand.
I don't think there's a racing manager involved here, and I don't know that there's total, I shouldn't even say that. I don't know. I mean, I don't think they can be, I don't think they're certain what he prefers doing. And yeah, his sloppy track win was good, but I am not convinced in any way that he's not better on turf still.
Yeah, because this is a crazy chaos race, I think. And the horse I ended up going with at a price was Captivating Moon, because I think that he is faster on turf, even though his figures have shown that he's about the same. But he hasn't really, since he got good, which was in the last 6 months, he hasn't had a real chance to run his best on the turf. His last turf race, he was fractious in the gate. Now, I don't know if the fractious comment was just because he just like sort of was a little unsettled right before the start, or if he was more fractious previous to that. But I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt at what I think will be at least 30-1 in this race, if he goes into this race. There's a ton of speed in this race. Factor This, it proved that he can run fast fractions and still run well. He's going to go for it from the outside. Channel Maker has speed. There's a lot of horses with speed in this race. And I just think it sets up for a closer. And Captivating Moon is the most interesting one to me at a huge price. And, you know, just based on my work, he still hasn't run like that breakout race for him. And if he runs on the turf today, Saturday, I think it could be his breakout race and he could blow up the tote board, even on top. But if he does,
give you the trainer's phone number. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Well, so did he say only if he, the only run on the turf, if it's off the turf?
You tell him to, yeah. They only run on turf if you insist that they run on turf. No, I think they're running on dirt is the last intention. It's subject to change, I guess.
Okay. Well, you know, hey, I watched his last turf race. He looked pretty solid. He's not much slower than these horses. And I think he still has some upside, but let's assume that he does scratch.
Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead.
assuming he does scratch, then the horse that I would go with is Rock Emperor. And it's just because I feel like any of these horses can win, but I really like the idea of getting this Rock Emperor at 10 to 1, and he probably will go off at 10 to 1 because of Instilled Regard, who unfortunately has to tote 124. And, you know, I liked him in his last race. I didn't like him as much as I liked Zulu Alpha, but I liked him, and he got third, and I should have hit the try. But, you know, carrying 124 and he's coming off his best turf race. I don't know. I think he's a little up against it, but you know, certainly he could win this race. So what interests me is that they bring this Rock Emperor for the first start of the year in his 4-year-old debut. Chad Brown, I didn't look up the stat, but I'm sure he does really well. And you know, he doesn't always win first off a layoff, but he often does. And they have to have this horse for a reason. He had a good figure as a 3-year-old when he came over here last year. I'm just going to give him the benefit of the doubt. Like, they wouldn't be shipping and running if this horse wasn't well met. And I think you will get 10 to 1. So that would be my pick. But I probably won't bet this race.
I think you'll be lower than 10 to 1.
Yeah, it just shocked me if Chad
6 to 1.
I mean, there's two Chads. There's Factor This. There's Channel Maker.
Factor This.
Synchrony.
Yeah. I don't think those horses are going to get bet. Yeah. I think Synchrony could be like 5 to 1 in this race, maybe 6 to 1.
Well,
so I'll jump in a little
bit. Where the guy makes the problems for himself in these lines is making these horses way too short that are going to be big prices. Like, you boxed yourself in with the real prices on the contenders, like the horses that people are going to see as contenders by shortening up horses that should be 30 or 50 to 1.
Okay. Chris, you had some thoughts?
Yeah, just a couple things. On Rock Emperor, I like the horse, but this horse is meant to go much longer, and I really think this is a prep. Brown is good off the layoff in these graded stakes, but I think if Instilled Regard wasn't in the race, Rock Emperor wouldn't be in here either. I think he shipped them both to get a race into Rock Emperor. I think the time to play him will be next time going longer. But, you know, I'm not saying he can't win, but that was kind of my read on him. He definitely has a good closing kick, and he's got class. Instilled Regard, I love the horse. I've played him a couple times, cashed a few times, not missed out a few times. But, you know, he doesn't get IRAD. IRAD's out, so I don't know who's going to ride. And that's a big difference on a turf course that is rail favoring, because IRAD's the greatest rail turf rider in the country. And he's carrying that weight, and he's Chad Brown, and he's not going to be 5 to 1. So
he'll be a favorite.
I think he's an underlay. Yeah. I think he's an underlay, but I mean, he could certainly win it, but I think he's a big underlay. And Factor This, though, I really was trying to make that my play, because I liked him last time. And he can go up to a mile and a half on the front end. I'm a little worried, though. Cassie has Don't Blame Rocket, a big closer, and he's got Secretary at War on Factor This's flank. I got to believe he's going to hound Factor This from start to finish, which will probably soften him up a little bit. This is kind of like you said, you can make Knox and all these horses. That's kind of wanting. Even Don't Blame Rocket, maybe with a rail trip, if the speed comes back, you know, he's not impossible in here. But I just kept going back to the horse that's going to get the trip is Dot Matrix. He's not going to be on the lead, but he doesn't have to be on the lead. He'll be I think he'll get the pocket trip. I think you'll have Factor This and Secretary at War ding donging it on the lead, and he can just tuck in that perfect pocket rail trip and then get first run. So from a trip standpoint, I really think the one is the play. But I get everything Marcus says on Channel Maker. I do agree he's kind of a grinder. He's better long, but that long fairgrounds stretch, I think, helps a grinder. He doesn't have to make that big acceleration. He can just grind away. And he's a game horse. He's been facing a lot tougher. So, you know, I still think he's the most likely winner. I just don't have a real good feel for the odds. I don't trust any of the morning lines in here. But if Marcus is right and Dot Matrix floats above 8-1, I think he's probably the bet in here.
Okay. Is that all we got?
I guess that's all I got.
That's all we got. I'm looking up one last item. While I was making doing some analysis while you were some formulator analysis, and that is 4-year-olds and up, 180 days or more on the turf. Chad Brown hits at 32% with a 199 ROI. Graded stakes, graded stakes 33% with a 201 ROI. So that he even has a positive ROI is pretty impressive. But he's never done it at Fairgrounds. So he does have a great record at Fairgrounds. He hits at 33%. But he's only had 6 starters at Fairgrounds. So that's the unknown. And I haven't looked at
twice.
He ran this race? Really? Okay. Well, then
won it twice.
Okay, then I'm very interested. I'll leave it at that, and we'll move on to the next race, which we weren't going to do the Fairgrounds Oaks, but you must have an opinion. So, one horse, if you think it's finite and she can't be beat, that's fine, but we'll keep it short. But what did you think on this one, Marcus?
I think she's probably just going to win. But I don't think she's a mortal lock for 2 reasons. One, she wasn't like off of every race until her last race. She wouldn't have been a mortal lock. So you've got 6 races where she is like a likely strong contender and 1 race where she's going to win for sure. So, I mean, I don't think that you should take 2-5 under those circumstances. Also, when she made the lead last time, she turned her head out for whatever reason. I don't know. I don't think British Idiom really ran that much at all. And I'm not sure how great she ever really was. I didn't try to beat her on top because I don't like anybody else to win the race. I guess Bonnie South, like if you believe in Bonnie South, if you think, oh, she went boom last time and she's got another forward move in her this time, because She Dares the Devil did come back and win the Honeybee. And this horse was like, I mean, it's not like She Dares the Devil was pressing that super fast pace in that allowance race at Oaklawn. She was back to the leader was like way, way out in front of everybody. And blinkers on for Bonnie South, who had run okay in the first couple races, improved considerably. She was like, I mean, I don't know. She was like the 3rd or 4th string for this barn, 4th or 5th string, I think, a couple months ago. Maybe she's just an improving horse. I don't really trust her. The temper's rising. I thought if she was going to do anything, it was going to be last time. And she just doesn't have it. Antoinette for Mott is like, blah, they're just getting a race in there. They could get black type in a graded stakes that's got a short field. My only thought was Stop Shop and Tammy was visually, I thought, impressive. And she did get an easy lead, but I don't see a lot of pace in here either. She could make the front again. And even though she looked like she was maybe getting a little tired the last half furlong, but then past the wire, like her ears came up and she galloped out with a lot of energy. Adds Lasix off a win, which is a little bit weird, but she's worked fast since then. And if she got a clear lead, she might be slightly interesting.
Okay. Hopefully Chris will observe the request of one horse, horse, an opinion on one horse in this race, whether you think Finite is unbeatable or is there a horse that has a chance to beat her?
No, Finite's beatable. Off that big win for Philly, I'm always trying to beat those horses. They can regress. I agree. Stop Shop and Tammy. First time Lasix, great breeding. Blistering workout since her last. Lots of upside. Her trainer's 5 for 14 at the meet, you know, 8 for 14 in the money. And I think she clears early. I mean, Finite's going to have to chase her. And I think they'll be content. They'll have a confident ride on Finite. And, you know, she might be hard to run down. So definitely, to me, Stop Shop and Tammy could pull the upset in here.
Okay. And I'll keep it short. I agree with Stop Shop and Tammy. And if I were to play Pickens, I would absolutely use her because Finite ran a bang-up race. And if she's ever going to react to a race, it's going to be to that last race. So let's go to our marquee race on the day, and that is the 12th race, the Louisiana Derby, 1 3/16 on dirt, the purse of $1 million for three-year-olds. Marcus, what did you think here?
This is a real like test of your brain. I think this is there are a lot of moving parts in here. I can't see taking one of the shorter prices necessarily in this race. I want to be looking for something juicier because I think there's a lot of volatility here. It's interesting on the pace dynamic end, there are really only two confirmed front runners. And in races with only two confirmed front runners, you have the possibility of one of those horses not breaking or being flat on the day. And so you're pretty likely to get a lone speed scenario in a race like that. As you know, it's obviously the second most likely scenario other than one lone speed on paper. So I suppose, here's another interesting line, 8-1 on Wells Bayou. I do not see that happening at all. But he's the inside speed, and if he were to get loose from New York traffic or Nye traffic or whatever that horse's name is, if he were to shake loose from him, he'd be formidable because he's improved with distance. And looking at Lucky, like those horses, a lot of those horses just can gallop all day, and he might be that kind of horse. I think stamina wise, if he's loose and going at a reasonable tempo, he could be very tough to beat. But I just think that, I mean, there's a pretty good chance that New York traffic confronts him from the start. I mean, he was pretty fast last time, and he has sharp workouts since then with blinkers on and an outside draw. Also don't know who's riding him because Saez isn't coming. Unless he misses the break, he's probably going to be, they're going to be head and head. But I don't see a ton of other, like, well, there's some tactical base. Like this horse, Silver State, he's going to have to be sent to get some sort of position. He has a little bit of speed. Modernist, even more so, but I don't even know if he's fast enough to get over. I mean, he doesn't have that much speed, even though he was right on the pace last time from post 14. They're certainly going to try to find some sort of position. I'm going to guess that it's going to be a solid to somewhat fast pace. Pick your price shot out of all these other disparate players. I mean, there are some horses I could give you antis on. I don't like some horses here, but I ended up picking on top number 12, Lynn's Map, who's 30-1 on the line. I doubt that he'll be that high. I'd say maybe 20, 22, something like that. He's going to be closer than he was last time, but I do think they want him off the pace, and which is like why it's Marty Jones is a throw out. All you have to do is go 3 and 4 races back. I mean, he came to hand decently at Churchill. His one turn mile maiden win was solid. And then he beat Mr. Monomoy on the square. Mr. Monomoy won easily the faster of the two Risen Star division. So that right there just suggests to me that this horse is good enough. I've seen the horse train. He's a really extremely long-legged animal. You know, the dam was like more like a closing 7/8 horse, I think. But I think if you go deeper into the pedigree and look at the horse himself, he's suited to running this far, 9.5 furlongs. I do think that He's got some hidden form. I believe he's been training well since he got back from that unfortunate trip to Oakland, which was undertaken because he drew post 14 for the LeCompte and was scratched. And he's the price that I settled on is maybe getting the right trip and coming around to something better than it looks like he might have in his last two starts at you know, whatever his win price is, it's going to be attractive.
Lynn's map. It's a tricky post, but clearly has a solid pattern, and I wouldn't take you off him. Chris, where did you land here?
Well, I thought similar in terms of the pace that there were really only two speed horses. And a lot of times when there's only two, like Marcus said, one of the horses could shake loose. I think Wells Bayou is by far the better of those two. I'm fading every Safi Joseph horse since of FBI indictments. and he's not going to have size. And I don't know. I just don't know how long he could stay with Wells Bayou. And I totally agree with Marcus. Looking at Lucky's probably the best stamina sire there is. I mean, his horses just almost always run better as they get longer. So even though this horse likes to be on the lead, I think he actually may be better as they go longer, especially if they don't have to go quite as fast early. So I'm pretty high on Wells Bayou, but I agree that 8-1 might be wishful thinking. Although, again, this morning line just has too many horses that are 6 or 8-1. In a 14-horse field, you just don't have all these low-priced horses. So I don't know. It's really hard for me to guess how it'll get bet without local horses, without local people at the track betting the local connections. Which is unfortunate because I'm sort of against the local horses, and the three horses I'm considering here are all shippers. We talked about Wells Bayou. The other two I like are Royal Act, who I picked his last start. I didn't know if I thought he could beat the Baffert horse, but I thought he was a long shot that could run second, and he ran well in his first dirt effort. He was kind of a grinder. At least he was kind of under a drive most of that race, but he just kept going. And he should be able to improve in a second dirt start, I think. And you know, his rider, Sadio, has been really riding well in California. So, you know, that horse, I think, will be grinding away late. And then the Pletcher horse on the 9-horse, Portos, is another who I think has talent, good breeding for a distance. You know, Todd Pletcher, IRAD was supposed to ride, so I'm not sure who will be on board. But I think he has a lot of upside. Again, I don't know if you can trust those morning line prices. I wish I had a better feel for the odds, but those three are the ones that I like. All three shipping in. I think the winner will come out of that, probably the Exacta. If I have to pick one for the pod, I think I'll just go with Wells Bayou. I think he's going to stay out of trouble, at least. But it for me, actually betting this race, I have to wait and some of the will pays going into this race. And I do want to make one plug for Formulator before we go. I meant to mention this. The new feature they have that helps you predict the off odds early on in the, you know, while there's betting going on in the race. They look at will pays and some other things, and they kind of project out what the post time odds will be. I've always used WillPays and a couple little Excel tools I have to try to get that information. We talked about it in the NHC as a way to kind of know what your off odds are going to be on horses. Really great tool for people who aren't math, really into the math side of things. You get a much better feel early on what the price of your horse is going to be. I really recommend that. If you're a Formulator user, fire that thing up, you know, right before the race and use that to help you get a sense for the odds. Because in a race like this, it'll be really helpful to figure out how the crowd is likely to play the race at post time.
Okay. Well, for a little change of pace for me in this race, first thing I'm going to say is, according to the time form, there's going to be a fast pace. And maybe it's just those two, the 3 and the 11. Winging it out there, but maybe some of these other horses are going to try to get position with such a big field. I think there is going to be a fast pace no matter what. And that tells me I want a closer in this race. It's also a mile and 3/16. So it's the closest thing to the Kentucky Derby that these horses are going to run. And that's when, that extra 16th, that's when some of these horses are going to be going a little bit beyond what they're capable of. And that's making me look at fractions, final fractions. Normally going into the Kentucky Derby, I look at final fractions, and any horse that finishes that last eighth in a 9-furlong race in over 13 seconds, you can toss from the Derby. Well, I didn't look at every horse in here, but there are a number of horses that did not even run a 13-second final fraction. Now, I want to be clear, I'm looking at time form adjusted fractions, because it makes sense that if it's an extremely slow track, that everything is going to be slower. So they actually adjust their fractions. And looking at that, I landed on two horses that I really like. So the first horse that I love and will single in any pick end that I play is going to be Enforceable. You're going to get 3-1 on this horse. There's just no reason why you're not going to get 3-1. I mean, he's not that clearly faster than these other horses, but he's coming into the race great. In the LeCompte, which he won, he ran a number that can win this race. His next race was the Risen Star, and I picked Monomoy, Mr. Monomoy, in that race because I figured Enforceable is going to react. And he did react. He reacted on the sheets, and he reacted just slightly on Byers. Well, that sets him up perfectly for this race. And he finished his last closing frac in 12:53, time form adjusted. So even though he reacted and ran second and ran a worse race than his LeCompte, he still showed that nice closing ability. So I think it sets him up to just blow this field away. I will single him. And I think 3-1, I'm going to get a great price on him. Another thing to think about is now that there's not a Kentucky Derby, this is it. I mean, this is the race for these horses. Like, there's no reason to hold back, right? There's no reason to prep, we want to save him for the Kentucky Derby. This is it. It's a $1 million race. It's a mile and 3/16. So I'm pretty keen on Enforceable. I do like Silver State. He also closed in under 13 seconds time form adjusted. He's got a nice pattern. He's by Heartspun out of an Empire Maker mare, and I will have a nice exacta with him as well.
Marcus, jump in.
Oh, Silver State I like too. I mean, he's a goofy horse. Not goofy is the wrong word. He's immature mentally. He's a giant. And I think that I thought he'd run a little better last time, but it wasn't an ideal trip for him either. And if you look at March 9th work, 111-3, I mean, I think they really just started to bear down on him. I mean, as you've seen this, kind of, he's a genius with these horses, with tweaking them along and getting this and that out of them for this race or that race or at this time. I feel like if this horse is going to be good, he's going to be good today. I'm a little concerned about how he's going to trip out. I can definitely see where you're coming from, Scott, with Enforceable. He's an admirable beast, and he has easily the best sustained finish of any horse that's run in this race. My only concern with him, yeah, you're absolutely right about the reaction and the chance to bounce back, but he's been going steadily since May, ran into late last year, hit the LeCompte, and he's got 5 weeks recovery. He's somewhat slight of build. My feeling is he's got some capped upside. That doesn't mean he won't be good enough to win this race. He certainly may be. But I worry that that might have been all that he has to give these last couple races. We'll see. He's a fine horse, and he's in good hands over there.
I understand that, and he's going to be the favorite. So you're looking, you know, you want to find reasons to beat the favorite.
Yeah, he might be. I mean,
he won his maiden at a mile and an eighth as a 2-year-old.
Correct. Yeah. So, no, he's got plenty. His stamina is not an issue for that horse. It wouldn't be surprised me if Wells Bayou even challenges him for favoritism. I think they'll be close in the price.
I hope so. I mean, that would be great because anything I can get on Enforceable. What I like most about this pick is it's not one of the a loony long shot that I sometimes come up with. And those things are great, but I like being on a favorite that he might not be the favorite, but even if he is the favorite, he still should be a solid 3-1. And
right, you think he's value as the favorite. It's fine.
I do.
I think a 3-1 shot if you think that you're getting the best of things.
Yeah, yeah. So that doesn't happen for me that often. So I'm excited about this race, and you know, maybe the best way to get value out of this horse is to single him in the pick ends, because you know, you could get value in other places and amp up the payoff because the win's not going to be that great.
Although you might, to me, when it's a 14 horse field, if you like him that much, you play him on top and go for some verticals because you could get some big payouts in this race.
Well, that's true. Although it's a crazy field. I mean, it's hard to narrow down. Like, you know, if I wanted to put four horses underneath in the super, I'm not even sure which four I would pick.
That's true. Good point. I like Enforceable just with his running style, and the fact, you know, I'm not convinced he's that much better than these. That price to me, I don't see the value. But you obviously feel like the added distance, and you know his the way he looks like he's going to get better with distance makes him, you know, going that much stronger. So, I mean, I just don't quite share that with you, but I certainly wouldn't be surprised if he wins. There is one other horse I wanted to mention. I liked him his last time. I picked Modernist in that at the last prep for this, but I liked Major Fed quite a bit underneath as a long shot, and he ran well. I liked him because I thought he had a lot of upside and that he would do well on the longer distances. So I think he's one who will be helped by the distance. He drew the rail. He gets Rosario to jump on. That's a lot to like. I think he's probably as good a closer as any other than maybe Enforceable in the race. So if the closers are going to dominate the race, to me, you've got to have that one in there, Major Fed.
Yeah, I would definitely put him in there. I would put him in there, absolutely.
So he's my local horse that I like.
He's a talented horse. Yeah, no, I mean, it was interesting. The son of the trainer does videos of in the morning. He sits up there on top of the steps by the finish. And he posted a video of that work on the 29th of February. You could just see like the last, you know, not quite eighth of a mile and then a little bit of the gallop out. And he was rolling. That was a very fast work. I didn't like the way he was going as fast as he was going. I didn't like his head carriage, and he seemed to be, I don't know. His last race was fine, but I'm just wondering if that second division of the Risen Star wasn't just poor, like kind of a very modest entry-level allowance sort of race. It was kind of just slow from start to finish, and I'm inclined to play against all those horses, actually. I'm going to throw one other name out. This is more for like vertical exotics, and that's Sharecropper, number 7, who is going to be a closer as well. 20-1 is an absolutely absurd. I'm sorry. I'm not going to be that harsh. The horse is not going to be 20-1. He's a 48-1 shot here or something like that. He's got some hidden stuff going on because he only won his main race by a neck, but that's because if you watch the race, he makes the lead easily. And as soon as he hits the front, he puts his feet in the ground. Al Stahl does not rush horses at all. This horse is a big route horse who, you know, he just hadn't, it's never been pushed whatsoever. that was a nice little race that horse ran. Accession was third in that race, and granted, he got the setup of all setups, but he came close to Nadal in the Rebel last time. So Union came back and won. I don't think that was a bad race. And then this horse was entered in that allowance race that Linz Mapp beat Mr. Bonomoy in, and he got sick after entries in December. And Stahl, being like the conservative, patient, careful type, gave him plenty of time. And he really, I mean, he desperately needed that last race, which was just a weird grinding race. I said I didn't like anything out of there. Well, I don't like Shake Some Action in Chestertown at shorter prices, but Sharecropper, who's going to be much farther off the lead and making just one run, big a chance for like major, major improvement at a huge price.
I can see that. I actually have a note to watch that last race, because there's a took up comment. It says it lacked room. Trip. So I want to watch that race, because the breeding is pretty sensational. Pioneer of the Nile out of a Curlin mare, who was a stakes winner routing and who was quite fast. So yeah, I can see Sharecropper underneath. All right. Well, our pod has extended a long way, so it's one of our longer pods.
Yes, Scott, you didn't know that because you never had me on, but I tend to do that to people's broadcasts. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay. We've had 2-hour pods before, and they've been very popular. But in the interest of wrapping it up as soon as we can, any spot plays, just on any other race in the card, that a horse that you really like, Marcus?
All right, chat amongst yourselves for 1 minute while I recall all of my selections. I don't want to give a short price really at all.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, just a good price horse that people should take under consideration. I'm sure Chris has one.
Probably one just interesting horse that is in early in the card. The second race is a maiden special weight going a mile. There's kind of a standout in there, the 13 horse Dream. I'm not going to say it's a big old long name. Dream a Little Dream of You. I hate those names where they put like six words and run them together.
Like Let It Happen, Carlos.
Yeah, like Let It Happen, Carlos. But that horse is going to get hammered. I was 3-1 on the morning line, but it'll be much lower. Brad Cox horse, really fast. But there's a horse in there, the 11, Global Brand, who's making its second start after a sprint prep for Tom Proctor, and really well-bred. It's by Warfront out of Marketing Mix. That's really good breeding. And its prep, its last race was clearly a prep. I mean, it just kind of galloped throughout and in the stretch, it closed and then really galloped out strong. I mean, it was clearly not meant to do anything but just get it ready for this race. So I think it could jump way forward off of that race. You never know how they're going to bet these maiden races. It's 10-1 on the morning line. But the 11-horse Global Brand, to me, is a live long shot in the second race at the fairgrounds.
Okay. Did you find anything, Marcus?
I can't tout any big prices in any of the other races. I mean, for my picks for the racing form, my best bet is in the 7th race, Mystic Guide. That horse is not going to be a big price, but I like him a lot. I'm going to be surprised if he doesn't win his sprint race first time out. It was just too short. He also got off to a bad start, which really compromised him. He galloped out so far in front so quickly after the wire. He's going to love two turns. I think he's 3-1 on the line. Unfortunately, he's going to be lower than that. But as a pick, I mean, if you have prices around him, which I think is possible, I mean, as someone to like key on in a pick, and I obviously prefer to key on longer priced horses than that, but it's not like he's going to be an odds on favorite. He'll be the favorite, I believe, but he'll be long enough that for me, he could be a potential anchor.
Okay, great. Well, before we wrap it up, I do want to say Thank you. Thanks, Marcus, for joining us. It was great having you on the show.
Well, thank you for having me. I enjoy talking about it. Really, I mean, I got to say, you guys go into really fine detail. I appreciate your perspectives. You really like to think outside the box. And for I'm sure your listeners find that it helps in the way that I think about races, too, to have just your perspective shifted and cast a different light on things. So thank you for that.
All right, great. Well, and thanks for your opinions. And I always take a second look at every horse that our guests pick and obviously that Chris picks. That will conclude show number 56 of the PH Pod. So I will say good luck this weekend and please enjoy the Brooklyn Boogaloo Blowout.
Cheers.
Giddy up.